The Haftarah for Parashas Vo'eira comes from Sefer Yechezkel. At the end of Perek Chof Ches, 28, and Perek Chof Tes as well, 29. The majority of the Haftarah talks about the punishment that Hashem is going to bring on Mitzrayim, the destruction that Hashem will bring on Mitzrayim. It specifically addresses the Ye'or, the Nile River, and Paroi, the king of Mitzrayim, as we'll see. And presumably that's the connection to the parasha, at least one of the connections to the parasha. I was actually introduced this week to a sefer written by Talmud Chacham in Baltimore, in the Neri Yisrael Yeshiva, which he goes to each Haftarah and he finds numerous connections in different parts of the Haftarah to the parasha, which I found to be interesting. But it'll suffice for our purposes, this connection that we see, the general idea that it's talking to the destruction of the Mitzrayim is spoken about, as well as the Ya'ar, the Nile River, which was plagued in this week's parasha with dam, that it turned into blood, and the Sephardim, the frogs that came from there. Seemingly, that's a connection to the parasha. The Haftarah actually begins with some words of encouragement from the Navi Yechezkel to the Jewish people, in between prophecies about the destruction of various nations that were enemies of the Jewish people. The Navi Yechezkel prophesizes about the Geula, the redemption of the Jewish people, and it seems from the Mefarshim is actually a dual meaning in these psukim, that that Yechezkel is addressing both the Geula, the redemption from the exile in Bavel between the first and second Beis HaMikdash, as well as the ultimate Geula, the ultimate redemption in the times of Mashiach. Let's take a look at source number one. Koy Omar Hashem Elohim. So says Hashem. When I will gather in the house of Israel, the Jewish people, from the nations that they are spread out amongst them, they are dispersed amongst them. And I will be sanctified through them in the eyes of the nations. And they will dwell on their land that I gave to my servant Yaakov. They'll go back to Eretz Yisrael and they'll live in Eretz Yisrael, the land that I gave to my servant Yaakov. And they will dwell in it with security, safely. They'll build houses, and they will plant vineyards. And once again, they'll dwell safely and securely. When I enact justice on all those hashotim oisam, those who disgrace them and degrade them, misaviv oisam, from the nations surrounding them, v'yadu'u ki ani Hashem Elokeihem, they will know that I am Hashem their God. So Hashem tells Navi Yechezkel, Navi Yechezkel says over to the Jewish people, that Hashem, will come the time of the Geula, will come back after the second Beis HaMikdash, after the goal is to build the second Beis HaMikdash, and in the Geula HaSidon, the times of Mashiach, the Jewish people will be gathered from amongst the nations, and Hashem adds in that v'nikdashti vam le'inei hagoyim, I'll be sanctified through them to the eyes of the nations, and they'll go back to their land, to Eretz Yisrael, they'll dwell in Eretz Yisrael with safety and security, they'll build houses, plant vineyards, and they'll live in tranquility. How will that be facilitated? By Hashem enacting justice, punishing the surrounding nations who had previously been enemies of the Jewish people, who kol hashotim oisam, all those who disparaged them, who degraded them, once they're punished and once they're destroyed, then the Jewish people will be able to live in peace and tranquility. The Dubna Magid takes note of the fact that there seems to be some repetition in these psukim, as well as there seems to be some extra lines which need to be addressed. He explains that these psukim actually address two components of the galus, of the exile of the Jewish people, and the geula, the redemption of the Jewish people. When the Jewish people were exiled, they're taken out of Eretz Yisrael as a punishment, not only did they suffer physically, not only were they punished in a physical sense, that they had to leave their homeland, that for the most part they lived in poverty, things were difficult in the physical sense, but they suffered spiritually as well. It was a galus, it was an exile for the neshama as well. They were not able to perform the mitzvahs as well. And from the perspective of Hashem's, of the Kiddush Hashem, of the sanctification and glorification of Hashem's name, there was diminished in the Galus as well. It says Dumna Magid, these psukim addressing the Geula, the redemption, they also speak to both aspects of the Galus, both aspects, the physical and the spiritual aspect of the Galus, and they say that in the time of the redemption, both the physical and the spiritual state of the Jewish people will be improved, will come back to the way it should be. He says that first they have Bekabitzias Beis Yisrael Menhu Amim Asher Afoy Tzuvam, is referring to the redemption from the physical aspect of the Galus, of the exile. Hashem will gather physically, Hashem will gather the Jewish people back together from all the nations in which they are dispersed. Then, V'niktashti Vam Leini HaGoyim, that's addressing the spiritual. That it will become clear in the world that Hashem is watching over the Jewish people, that Hashem is taking care of the Jewish people. Hashem, His name will be sanctified and glorified through the Jewish people to the eyes of the nations. That is an aspect of the spiritual redemption. That the state of spirituality in the world as a whole will be elevated by the fact that Hashem's name will be sanctified and glorified by bringing back the Jewish people.
The fifth cup that we don't drink, isn't that a bringing us, that Hashem will bring us back? That will.
It corresponds to the Hei see Eschem al Aret. Hashem will be
a link to the Seder also. This
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Very good, thank you.
So then the Pasuk says, V'yoshvu al admosam, in general, they'll dwell in their land once again. That's Pasuk Chaf Hei. Pasuk Chaf Vav now discusses in more detail what will be the circumstances of their new settlement in Eretz Yisrael. And there, the Pasuk will address both aspects once more. The Pasuk starts off, Pasuk Chaf Vav, V'yoshvu aleha lovetach. The Dubna Magid points out that this actually seems to be a repetition in the Pasuk. It starts off, V'yoshvu aleha lovetach, they'll dwell on it securely. And a couple of words later, it says V'yoshivu lovetach. The words in italics. V'yoshivu lovetach. Says the same thing. The pasuk starts off V'yoshivu aleha lovetach, and the pasuk repeats V'yoshivu lovetach. So the Dubin Magid explains that the first part of the pasuk is referring to the physical salvation, the physical redemption. V'yoshivu aleha, they'll dwell on it, on the land itself, the actual living on the land, lovetach securely, and there they'll be privileged to have all of the great gashmias, all of the great material aspects of the world, uvan uvatim, they'll build houses, and they'll plant vineyards, they'll have it good physically, they'll have it good, the materialism will be good. In addition to that, v'yashivu lovetach. V'yashivu lovetach doesn't say this time, v'yashivu aleha on it lovetach. In the beginning of the pasuk, it was talking about the physical aspect, the fact they'll be living in the land, the way in which they'll live their lives on a daily basis. That's v'yoshvu aleha lovetach. But there's also v'yoshvu lovetach, spiritually, in the mind and soul, they'll live in tranquility. When Hashem destroys and punishes all their enemies, all those enemies who prevented the Jewish people from being able to serve Hashem properly, now when Hashem enacts justice against them, then v'yoshvu lovetach, in a spiritual sense, spiritually and psychologically, they'll be able to live in comfort and in tranquility, and they'll be able to serve Hashem properly. The Dubna Magid explains these psukim. There's actually two aspects to the galus, the exile, and those two aspects are addressed in the geula and the redemption as well, both the physical and the spiritual. Regarding the words v'nikdashti von leini hagoyim, I'll be sanctified through them in the eyes of the nations. Take a look at source number 2, the Metzudeis David, one of the primary commentaries on the Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Metzudeis says, V'nikdashti vam, Eheyem mekudosh al yedeihem, I will be sanctified through them, B'ho'oysoi sumoifsim she'eseh ozimohem, to the signs and the wonders that I will do then with them. The Metzudeis seems to understand that when Yechezkel was prophesizing about the redemption, presumably from the redemption from the Babylonian exile between the two Batei Mikdash, to the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the building of the second Beis HaMikdash, that Nechezkel tells the Jewish people that when they come back, when they're brought back to Eretz Yisrael for the rebuilding of the Beis HaMikdash, the Nikdash Tivam, Hashem will be sanctified. How will that be? The Metzudei seems to say that it's going to be through Oysoi Sumayfsim, wonders, great signs and wonders that Hashem will do for the Jewish people. There's a pasuk. Before we get to that, there's a problem. There's a problem with that. Because historically, if you look at the sources, we find that there were not any great miracles that took place when the Jewish people came back to Eretz Yisrael for the second Beis HaMikdash. In fact, the Gemara Maseches Brachos says that really what was in the original plans, the Jewish people were supposed to come back to Eretz Yisrael with Ezra for the second Beis HaMikdash with great miracles just as they went out of Mitzrayim. However, because of their sins, they didn't merit to do so. They didn't merit to have the great miracles like they had when they left Mitzrayim. So in fact, it seems that there were no great Oysos and Moifsim at the time when Hashem gathered the Jewish people back from Babel and brought them back to Eretz Yisrael. So what is the intention here? What does the pasuk mean to say Nikdash Vivam, the Oysos and Moifsim? What's it all about? Furthermore, Chazal tell us that in the second Beis HaMikdash wasn't the same as the first Beis HaMikdash. It was lacking a lot of the Nikdash Vivam, the sanctification of Hashem's name, the glorification of Hashem's name, which the Navi prophesizes will be in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. If anything, it seems that the second Beis HaMikdash was lacking a lot in the Kiddush Shem Shamayim that there was in the first Beis HaMikdash. Chazal say in the Gemara in Yuma, in source number 3, the Gemara is talking about the fire that was on the Mizbeach. Gemara asks the question that it seems as if there was no fire that automatically came down from Shemayim, from the Mizbeach in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says, V'homar Rav Shmuel Bar Inyo. Rav Shmuel Bar Inyo says, Ma'idich Siv, what's the meaning of that which is written in the Pasuk? V'erze boi v'achabdo. Hashem says that I'll be pleased with it and I'll be honored with it, referring to the second Beis HaMikdash. In the pasuk is written, the word V'yikovda is written without a hey at the end. It's not a typo. The word V'yikovda is written in the pasuk without a hey at the end. The Korinon Yikovda, it's spelled without a hey, but it's read as if it has a hey. The pasuk says, V'yirotze boi V'yikovda, that I'll be pleased with it, I'll be honored with it, and it's spelled V'yikovda without a hey, but it's read with a hey. So, Ma'ishnod Mechusar hey. Why is the word missing a hay in the pasuk? The word v'yikavda is spelled usually with a hay. So Gemara says, Eidu chamisha dvarim, this is a reference to the five things, shehoyu bein mikdash risha in the mikdash sheni. Those five aspects of the revelation of Hashem that were lacking in the second base of mikdash. They were there in the first base of mikdash and lacking in the second base of mikdash. What were they? Ve'elu hay. These are what they are. Oroin v'kapoyres to kruvim. One group is the Oroin, the Kapoyres, which was the cover of the Oroin, the Kruvim, and the Kruvim, which were on top of the cover of the Oroin. Eish, the fire that would come down from Shemayim on the Mizbeach, that was missing as well. Ushchina, the Ashras Ashchina, the resting of the Shchina on the Beis HaMikdash, that was lacking. Vruach HaKodesh, and the divine inspiration, which was referring to the Nevi'im. There was no Nevuah, there were no Nevi'im in the time, the majority of the second Beis HaMikdash. Vurim V'tumim, the Urim V'tumim, which was able to bring messages directly from Hashem through the Choshen, the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, that was missing in the second Beis HaMikdash as well. So we find that not only were there not great miracles when the Jewish people went back to rebuild the second Beis HaMikdash, but also, as far as the Kiddush Shem Shamayim, sanctification and glorification of the name of Hashem, that seemed to have been lacking as well. The Navi Yechezkel associates Nikdash Tivom Leni Hagoyim, that the coming back to Eretz Yisrael and the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash will have a great sanctification of Hashem's name, have a great Kiddush Shem Shamayim. It's difficult because it seems to have been lacking. Second Beis HaMikdash, not only was it not equal to the first Beis HaMikdash, but it was lacking a lot of what was present in the first Beis HaMikdash as well. This problem exists as well in another pasuk. In source number 4 is the pasuk in Chagai. I say for Chagai in Treyosar, referring to the second Beis HaMikdash, the pasuk says, "Godol yihye kevod habayis hazeh ha'achrei min harishoin, omar Hashem tzavokos." Hashem says that the kavod, the honor, the glory of this bayis, the second Beis HaMikdash that will be built, Godol will be greater than the first one. Hashem says. In what way was the kavod, the glory of the second Beis HaMikdash greater than that of the first Beis HaMikdash? We just saw clearly in the words of Chazal, in the Gemara in Yuma, that if anything, the glory, the sanctification of Hashem's name, the Kvod Shamayim, in the second Beis HaMikdash was less than the first Beis HaMikdash because of the five things that were missing. And Ibn Yisrael Eibshitz, in his Sefer on the Haftorahs, he suggests a very interesting explanation. And he says, granted that in quantity, the Kvod Shamayim, the Kiddushim Shamayim, the glorification and sanctification of Hashem's name, the great miracles, were lacking in the second Beis HaMikdash. They weren't there. But he says that perhaps, from the standpoint of quality, the Kiddushim Shamayim in the second Beis HaMikdash was greater than in the first. How so? So Ibn Yisrael Eibshitz explains that historically, in the times of the first Beis HaMikdash, things were relatively peaceful for the Jewish people, for the most part. They lived under their own rule, they had their own kings. There were some wars, but the Jewish people ruled over themselves, they had their own kings, they had their own rulers. And for the most part, the non-Jewish people stayed out of the business of the Jews, they stayed out of Eretz Yisrael, they weren't mixed in amongst the Jewish people. That was all in the first Beis HaMikdash. So though in the first Beis HaMikdash, there were great miracles which took place in the Beis HaMikdash, there was great Kvod Shamayim, Kiddushim Shamayim going on, but only the Jewish people were exposed to it. Only the Jewish people could see it clearly. The non-Jews outside of Eretz Yisrael, they weren't exposed to it. They didn't see it clearly, they didn't see the great miracles that took place in Yerushalayim, the Beis HaMikdash, the way in which Hashem showed clearly the way his love for the Jewish people, his Ashras Ashchina, that his Shechina dwelt amongst the Jewish people. It was seen by the Jewish people, but the non-Jews, who for the most part stayed out of Eretz Yisrael, they didn't see it, they didn't experience it. When it came to the second Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people for the most part were not under their own rule, they were ruled by others, the Greeks, the Romans. There was a lot more involvement of non-Jews in the lives of the Jewish people. Not only that, but when they came to rule over the Jewish people, the officers, the Roman officers, others, when they came, they would come to Eretz Yisrael, they bring their families, they bring their friends, they developed communities of non-Jews in Eretz Yisrael as well, living amongst the Jewish people. Only during the second Beis HaMikdash was there the opportunity for the non-Jews to be exposed to the great miracles that took place in Yerushalayim and in the Beis HaMikdash. Only in the second Beis HaMikdash, even though there weren't as many miracles, but whatever there was, it became evident and became clear to the non-Jewish people in addition to the Jewish people. Historically, they found in excavations, they found signs from the times of the second Beis HaMikdash in foreign languages telling the non-Jews until what point of the Beis HaMikdash they were able to go up to. There's a, there's a letter that's printed from a Roman officer who writes in great detail about how he observed the bringing of the Korban Pesach, which was a tremendous occasion. All the Jewish, many Jewish people would come up to the Beis HaMikdash with their animals, and he describes the whole process, the whole procedure, the Kohanim and the Levim doing all their jobs, and how everything was orderly, and how everything was done, and how afterwards everyone would go out and roast their Korban Pesach. He describes in great detail what transpired there. And these are things that only were only relevant in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. In the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, the non-Jews stayed out. The Jewish people saw much greater miracles, but the non-Jews didn't see anything. In the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, although the miracles were not the same, but they were at this point they were exposed to the non-Jewish people as well. They saw it, they experienced it, and they were indeed impressed. They were indeed impressed. They saw clearly that Hashem rested His Shechina, His presence amongst the Jewish people. That impressed them. They held the Jewish people in higher esteem and higher regard. Says Ibn Yisrael Eibshitz that perhaps that's what Yechezkel HaNavi is referring to over here. Yechezkel HaNavi says that if you're going to come up to the second Beis HaMikdash, you're going to come up after the Golos in Bavel. I'll be sanctified through them to the eyes of the nations. This is a great opportunity, a unique opportunity. In the second Beis HaMikdash, that was not in the first Beis HaMikdash, for Hashem's glory to be revealed to the non-Jewish eyes. During the first Beis HaMikdash, it was only the Jewish people who saw it. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the non-Jewish people got to see it as well. Hashem's name was sanctified then in the eyes, in the eyes of the non-Jewish people as well, which Yechezkel Hanavi says is a special opportunity and something that's unique and special in the second Beis HaMikdash. I think that perhaps often we think to ourselves, we perhaps look at friends and relatives who live in Eretz Yisrael or where they live in places that there's predominantly or exclusively Jewish communities. And there are a lot of perks to that, there are a lot of advantages to be living around Jews. Sometimes people live in places where you don't see any Chol Shabbos. On Shabbos, you can go through Shabbos, you don't see anyone being Mechal Shabbos. There are things are run on a Jewish schedule. So on and so forth, there's many opportunities for Torah and mitzvahs going around the street. And perhaps, often, we living outside of such communities, we feel bad, we feel that we lack that privilege. But we have another unique opportunity that others don't have. Living amongst the non-Jews gives us a special opportunity. We can mekadeshim shamayim leinei hagoyim, v'kadash libon leinei hagoyim. We could sanctify Hashem's name and glorify Hashem's name leinei hagoyim, which is a special, unique opportunity. Yechezkel Hanavi tells us that's something that's special, that's something that's to be viewed as an opportunity and a privilege to be able to sanctify Hashem's name, not only amongst Jewish people, but amongst non-Jews as well. And we have to see that not only as a privilege, but as a responsibility. Because it's such a great privilege, that's what makes it such a great responsibility, to make sure that in our interactions with Goyim, around Goyim, that the way we conduct ourselves is a way that brings about v'nikdash v'gom l'ni ha-goyim, that through us, Hashem's name should be sanctified, should be glorified amongst the nations. It's a special privilege that we have, not to be looked at as, unfortunately, we have to behave ourselves because the goyim are looking. Rather, we have a privilege to be able to sanctify Hashem's name to the non-Jewish people as well, which is the privilege that Yechezkel Hanavi and perhaps Chagai Hanavi were speaking about when they spoke about the opportunities in the Bayis Sheni, the second Beis HaMikdash, when the Jewish people return from their exile. Let's continue to the next pasuk, source number 5 on page 2. Perek Chof Tes begins, V'ashono ha'asiris bo'asiri b'shnei mosor l'chodesh ho'yo d'var Hashem elai lemor. In the 10th year from the kingdom of Tzidkiyahu, bo'asiri in the 10th month of Teves, b'shnei mosor l'chodesh on the 12th of the month, ho'yo d'var Hashem elai lemor, the word of Hashem was to me, Yechezkel saying, Ben Adam, son of man, again is the way that Yechezkel Hanavi is referred to often, and say for Yechezkel, Ben Adam, son of man, Sim Ponecha, place your face, literally, or turn your face, Al Paroi Melech Mitzrayim, towards Paroi the king of Mitzrayim, V'hinove Olav, he prophesies about him, V'al Mitzrayim Kula, and about the entirety of Mitzrayim. Hashem tells Yechezkel that now he should prophesy about Mitzrayim. Now the language used in the pasuk over here, Ben Adam Simponecha, that these actually, if you go through the Sefer Yechezkel, you see these are just terminology that's used throughout the Sefer. Simponecha, this language, when Hashem's going to tell Yechezkel to say Nevuah, so not so often, but a number of times, 5 or 6 times in the Sefer, Hashem uses this language of Simponecha. The simple understanding of the words is that perhaps he's telling Yechezkel turn in a certain direction, towards a certain place, towards a certain nation, and say your prophecy about them when you turn in that direction. That seems to be the simple understanding of the words. If you look in source number 6, the Targum on this pasuk, and in other places in the Sefer as well, when this term, Simponecho, is used, the Targum says, Bar Adam, which means son of man, Kabel Nevuah, accept a prophecy, Al Paroi Malkol Mitzrayim, about Paroi the king of Mitzrayim, so on and so forth. The Targum explains the word simponecha to mean kabel nevuah, receive prophecy. Receive a prophecy, I'm going to now give you a prophecy about Paroi and Mitzrayim. Kabel nevuah, receive, accept that prophecy. Rabbi Yosef Eibshitz asks, what does it mean accept the prophecy? Yechezkel Hanavi has a choice. If Hashem is giving him a prophecy, he's giving him the prophecy. What does it mean, kabel nevuah, accept the prophecy? And to answer this question, Rabbi Yonasan Eibshitz brings in another Gemara, which is also a bit of a troublesome Gemara. Source number 7. Gemara in Megillah is talking about Yoshio HaNovi. He had a need to ask the Novi what Hashem, the message that Hashem was trying to send to the Jewish people. And the Gemara discusses, actually the point of the Gemara is to prove that Chulda was a Nevi'a. She was one of the seven Nevi'ais. The Gemara is there discussing the seven Nevi'ai sources, for each of them how we know that they had prophecy. So the Gemara discusses that Yoshiyahu went to Chulda HaNevi'a to find out what was the will of Hashem, what was the message that Hashem was sending to the Jewish people. And the Gemara asks, how was Chulda able to prophesize? She lived in the times of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was the main prophet. How was she able to prophesize in his presence? And the Gemara says that Chulda was a relative of Yirmiyahu, therefore he allowed her to prophesize as well. So the Gemara says, fine, I understand that Chulda could say prophecy, but V'yoshiyah gufe yehechi shovik Yirmiyah u'mishadil l'gaba. How could Yirmiyahu not go to how could Yoshiyahu not go to Yirmiyahu, the main prophet, and go to Chulda Nevi'ah instead? How could that be? Why, if he has a question, he wants to find out the will of Hashem, the message of Hashem, why would he not go to Yirmiyahu and go to Chulda instead? So Amri debate of Shila. In the Beis Medrash of Shila, they answered, Mipnei she'hanoshim rachmoni, Yosein. Because women are compassionate. So Yoshiyahu was nervous that the message over here might not be such a positive message. Might be a harsh message. So he said, oh, I have a choice. I can go to a male Navi in Yirmiyahu, or I can go to Chulda Nevi'a, a woman Nevi'a, and go to her. So he says, women are usually more compassionate, so I'll go to Chulda. And the obvious question is, if Hashem's sending a message, so who cares who you go to? You go to Yirmiyahu, Chulda, and Hashem sending a message, he'll send the same message to Yirmiyahu as he will to Chulda. What do you gain by going to Chulda? She's Rachmanias. Hashem's sending his message, the message you're going to get either way is the same message. What does Yoshiyahu gain by going to Chulda over going to Yirmiyahu? And there are a number of answers to this question. It's a very big, very important source in trying to understand exactly how Nevuah works. The answer to this question might reflect strongly on how the mechanics of how a Novi gets Nevuah. But this question is addressed by the Marshal. Source number 8. So he says, "Einoi nira the hachi ka'amar." Says the Marashah, doesn't seem that this is what it's saying. The lakach shadar law. The reason why Yoshiyahu inquired of Chulda was the rachmani yisein, because women are more merciful. V'tisnabi loy l'toyva. Therefore, shall give him a good prophecy. V'chimishum the rachmani yisein tishanin nevuasa meirah l'toyva. Could it be that because women are more merciful, so change the nevuah from a bad nevuah to a good one? If he was worried that Yirmiyahu will give him a bad prophecy, certainly she'll say the same thing. What did he gain by going to Chulda over Yirmiyahu? We could say, what does the Gemara mean? Why did Yeshiyahu inquire of Chulda instead of Yirmiyahu? Because they're merciful. They're merciful, and therefore she will beseech Hashem, daven to Hashem, and ask Him for mercy to change the harsh decree to a good decree. So the Mashal explains, the Rachmani Yosein is not going to change what the Nevuah is. The prophecy, the message of Hashem will be the same either way. But, if Doshim Rachmani Yosein, when Chulda gets the Nevuah, when she receives the Nevuah from Hashem, the message from Hashem, if she perceives that it's a harsh Nevuah, it's a bad Nevuah, she could dive into Hashem, and she could change. Perhaps Hashem could change the prophecy, change the message from bad to good because of her tefillos, and presumably so long as she never said over the bad nevuah, then it'll change. Hashem will change the bad nevuah to a good nevuah, and things will work out better. So Yoshiyahu, he sent to Chulda to find out from Chulda what the nevuah was. This way, if Chulda would receive a nevuah and it was not good, since she's Noshim Rachmaniyos, women are more merciful and compassionate, she would dive into Hashem to change the decree, which she was not so confident would happen had he inquired of Yirmiyahu. Says the Yidnei Sinebshitz, perhaps when Hashem says to Yechezkel, Simponecha, Kabel Nevuah, accept the Nevuah, Hashem saying to Yechezkel, I'm going to give you a nevuah now, a prophecy. Don't start up. Don't start davening and trying to change the nevuah. Accept the nevuah as is. Give it over as is. And don't try to change anything. We see that the Novi has the power to daven to Hashem to change the nevuah. So therefore, it says in the Sinai, perhaps that's what it means when Hashem tells Yechezkel, Sim ponecha, kabel nevuah, accept the nevuah. It means don't try to change it. You have it in your power to try to change it. Hashem says, listen, please don't start, don't daven, don't try to change it. Kabel nevuah, take the nevuah as it is and give it over as is without trying to change anything. Let's continue, source number 9, back to the Haftarah. What's the message that Hashem gives over to Yechezkel about Mitzrayim? Daber v'omar ta, speak and you shall say. Koyomar Hashem Eloikim. So says Hashem, Hineni olecha, Paroi melech Mitzrayim. Behold, I am against you. Paroi, king of Mitzrayim, Hashem says, I'm going to fight against you. Hatanim hagodoyl horivetz b'soichi oirov. The great sea serpent, horivetz b'soichi oirov, who lies in his river. This is a way of referring to the fact that the pride of Mitzrayim was the river, the Nile River was the pride of Mitzrayim, that the Nile River irrigated the entire land of Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim, they didn't have to rely on rainfall because they had the Nile River which would give water to all the fields of Mitzrayim. So that was the pride of Mitzrayim. So the nation of Mitzrayim, the land of Mitzrayim is identified by its great pride, by what's important to it, which is its Yor, which is its river. So Hashem says, Hashem refers to Paroi as the great sea serpent who lies in his river. Asher Omar, that Paroi said, Li Yoyri Vani Asisini. Li Yoyri, to me is my river. Paroi says, I have my river, that's all I need. Hashem, you have the rain, I don't need your rain. Li Yoyri, I have my river. My river keeps my keeps the land of Mitzrayim moist. It gives us the water that we need. Li Yoyri, to me is my river. I have my river. I don't need you, Hashem. Vani Asisini, and I. Seems the literal translation of the word Asisini, according to the Mefarshim, explained means I elevated myself. I raised myself up. Paroi says I made myself into a very important person. I'm important. I'm self-sufficient. I have my river. I don't need anything further. We'll get back to this, but this statement expresses the gaiva, the haughtiness of Paroi. Paroi held himself in great esteem, and he held that he was self-sufficient. He didn't need anyone else. He didn't need anything else. He could live on his own. So Hashem says, what am I going to do to you, Paroi? V'nosati chachim bil choyecho. I will put a fishing hook in your cheek. V'hidbakti digasi oirecho b'kaskis oisecho. Paroi was referred to as the great sea serpent, and the rest of the Mitzrayim, the rest of the Egyptians, are referred to as digasi oirecho, the regular fish of the river. So v'hidbakti digasi oirecho, v'hidbakti, and I will attach digasi oirecho, the fish of your river, meaning the Egyptians, b'kaskis oisecho. I'm going to attach them to your scales, kaskis oisecho, the scales of the fish. V'halisicho mitoichi oirecho. I will raise you up out of your river. The ace called the gasi oirecho b'kaskis oisecho tidbach. When I raise you out of the river, all of the rest of the fish of your river, all of the rest of the Egyptians, will be attached to your scales. Therefore, they will be raised up, drawn out of the water with you. Unitashticho hamidbara, and I'll throw you out to the wilderness. Oischo you, the ace called the gasi oirecho, and all of the fish of your river as well. Al pnei asodet yipoil, you'll fall on the face of the field. Loisei osef, loisei kaveitz, you will not be gathered in, nor will you be gathered together. Lichayas haaretz loif hashemayim esaticho loachlo, to the wild animals of the land and to the birds of the heavens, I will give you to eat. Says Hashem, I'm going to take you out of your land. I'm going to destroy you. Just as a fish out of water has no hope to live, so to Hashem says, I'm going to draw you out of your river, and I'm going to destroy you, I'm going to punish you. You're going to be thrown out to the wilderness, as a fish would dry out in the wilderness, so you will be killed out as well in battle. You'll be left on the face of the field, no one will bury you. You'll be left for the wild animals of the land and for the birds of the heavens to eat you, you'll be destroyed and you'll be disgraced as well. Hashem says, because Paroi seemed the Psukim seem to identify that the reason why Hashem is contending against Paroi is because of what he says, Li Oiri Vani Asisini. Those are the important words. The Paroi says, Li Oiri, I have my river Vani Asisini, and I raise myself up, and therefore Hashem says, because of your haughtiness, Hashem says, I'm going to punish you, I'll knock you down, and I'll destroy you. We said that the simple meaning of the word Vani Asisini, the literal meaning, is, and I raise myself up. But the Midrashim, Chazal, tell us that it means a lot more than that. In source number 10, the Medrash Rabbah and Shemois talks about a discussion between Moshe Rabbeinu and Paroi. Moshe says, I'm coming on behalf of Hashem. Hashem says, you should let the Jewish people go out of Mitzrayim. Ends the conversation between Paroi and Moshe, and Paroi says, who's this Hashem? I want to know the details all about him. I look him up in my books, in my reference guide for gods, and find if he's listed there. Conversation back and forth between Paroi and Moshe Rabbeinu. And finally, after Moshe goes on and on about the fact that Hashem is the master of the world and everything you see around you in the world is all Hashem bringing it about, Paroi says to Moshe, Om Elohim, Paroi says to Moshe and Aroi, Mitchilo sheker atem oimrim. You're lying from the beginning. Everything you say, every word you say is a lie. Why? Ki ani hu adon ha'olam. I am the master of the world, says Paroi. Vani borosi atzmi ves nilos. I created myself and the Nilos, the Nile River as well. Shenemar, it says in the Pasuk, Li Ya'iri Vani Asisini. I have my river, Vani Asisini, the Medrash understands to mean, I made myself. Ani Asisini, I made myself. Paroi says, you're liars, you say Hashem created everything, it was me. I made the Nilos, I made the Nile River, I made myself, I'm the master of the world, what are you bringing me messages from Hashem? Furthermore, source number 11, the Medrash says, Paroi says, Parim Minayin Sha'osa Atma Eloya. Where do we see that Paroi made himself into a god? He wasn't just your regular Balgaiva, your run-of-the-mill haughty person who was full of himself. He made himself into a god. Shenemar, Li Ya'iri Vani Asisini. I have my river, Vani Asisini, I made myself, I'm the god, I'm in charge, and I run everything. Paroi's haughtiness was taken to a whole new level. He wasn't just full of himself, but he also considered himself a god, and he claimed that he created himself and he created an oil river as well. Come back to this shortly, Mitzvah. Let's go a few psukim further. Source number 12 on page number 4. Hashem continues in his message to Mitzrayim through the Navi Yechezkel, V'yodu'u kol yoshvei Mitzrayim ki ani Hashem. And through the great destruction that I'll bring about on Mitzrayim, all of those who dwell in Mitzrayim will know that I am Hashem. Why am I going to bring about this destruction on Mitzrayim? Ya'an heyoisam mish'enes koner leveis Yisrael. Why? Ya'an, because heyoisam, they were mish'enes koner, a reed-like support leveis Yisrael. For the house of Israel, for the Jewish people, they were a reed-like support. What does that mean? B'sofsam b'cha b'kaf teiroitz. They grab onto you to try to support themselves. Right? The Mitzrayim was like a reed. When the Jewish people grabbed onto them to try to support themselves, Bakaf Teiroitz. B'safsam b'cha b'kaf. When they grab onto you with their hand, Teiroitz, you break. Uvokatolohem kol kaseif. And then you puncture their, when they fall, because they're trying to support themselves, they're holding onto you, and you break. If you pierce their shoulder, and when they lean on you, you break. You force them to stand on your own. Hashem says to Navi Yechezkel, Mitzrayim, you were a reed-like support for the Jewish people. You gave the impression that you were giving them support, but then when they tried to lean on you and depend on you, you cracked, you broke, they fell over, they punctured their shoulders. Obviously, you're talking poetically. And they punctured their shoulders, and they realized they cannot rely on you, and they leaned on you, and you broke. They realized they cannot rely on you, they had to stand on their own. What's this referring to? Sir Rav Pam, in his book, Sefer, on the Haftarah, he explains a bit it goes lengthy way that we find throughout the Nevi'im that both the northern kingdom, the Ten Shvatim, and also Yehuda and Binyamin, the southern kingdom, numerous times they made treaties, they made deals with Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim would protect them, Mitzrayim would help them in their battles against other nations, Ashur, or whoever it might have been. And time after time, when the Jewish people relied on Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim turned their backs on them, they double-crossed them. And the Jewish people relying on Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim didn't come through, that caused great troubles to the Jewish people, that caused them a lot of problems. They ended up suffering greatly at the hands of their enemies because they had been relying on Mitzrayim, and Mitzrayim didn't come through for them. Not only did Mitzrayim not come through for them, Mitzrayim advised them improperly, which the Jewish people followed the advice of Mitzrayim because they assumed that Mitzrayim would be there to back them up. And Mitzrayim wasn't. That caused great pain and suffering for the Jewish people. And not only is this a complaint against Mitzrayim for not coming through on behalf of the Jewish people, but this is a complaint against the Jewish people as well. The Jewish people in the first place shouldn't have relied on Mitzrayim. Their reliance on Mitzrayim was too strong. They put too much confidence and too much reliance on Mitzrayim. And this is not something that ended when Mitzrayim was destroyed. And as we live through our portion of history, we see this, that things haven't changed very much. In the world that we live in, we find the same thing, that Jewish leaders, Jewish government officials, put a lot of focus on finding support, making alliances with other nations, whether it's politicians, whether it's government officials from other countries, whoever it might be. And we see it's well known, it's no secret, that often behind the scenes, there's a lot of double-crossing, there's a lot of that the reliance that Jewish people, Jewish leaders, put on other officials is often comes at a great expense to the Jewish nation, to Jewish land as well. And it's a message we have to take from the words of the Haftarah that it's not a good idea to put your reliance on other nations. We should put our reliance only on Hashem. Now, understandably, a person has to do ishtadlos, there has to be effort. But the ratio of reliance on other nations to trust in Hashem has to very much favor the trust in Hashem. Primarily, we have to put our trust, our confidence in Hashem. And also as well, on the side, we also have to do ishtadlos, put in our efforts. Obviously, there has to be diplomacy, or whatever else there has to be, but there has to, the primary focus has to be reliance and trust in Hashem. He is ultimately the only one who can protect us and who will take care of us. And relying on other nations, besides the fact that we should all be relying on Hashem and not on them, that we can never truly trust them. They're not really concerned for our well-being, and there's always the concern that they won't come through for us at the end of the day. So if we look at the past, these seven psukim of Perek Chof Tes, look at them as a whole, we seem to find two separate reasons for why Hashem is going to punish Mitzrayim. First, we find that Hashem quotes Paro, you're saying, Li ye'oiri v'ani asisini, a great statement of denial of Hashem's control of the universe, of Hashem being the God and the master of the universe. That seems to be one complaint against Mitzrayim and one reason for their destruction. And we find another aspect, and that's in Pasuk Zayin, where the Navi talks about the fact that Mitzrayim was unreliable when the Jewish people relied on them for support, when the Jewish people were depending on them, they didn't come through, and they caused, because of that, great pain and suffering for the Jewish people. And at first glance, they seem to be two distinct reasons for the destruction of Mitzrayim. But I think that if we look a little deeper, we'll find that there's really only one underlying idea which really connects both of these reasons. Let's go back for a moment to the earlier psukim, which Hashem complaint to Paroi is that Paroi says, Li Yoiri Vani Asisini, I have my river, I have my Nile River, I don't need you Hashem, I don't need any rain, I can take care of myself. And clearly that comes from the Midah of Gaiva, haughtiness. So I'd like to explore for a few moments here the Midah of Gaiva, find out a little bit more the Midah of Gaiva, and perhaps it'll help us understand these psukim a little better. If we take a look in source number 15, which is on page 5, the Sefer Orchis Tzadikim, the first shar, the Sefer Orchis Tzadikim, goes through many different midos that a person should stay away from, many midos that a person should practice, should get himself used to, many good midos that a person should adapt. And he starts off, the first shah, the first midah discussed by the Orchis Tzadikim is the midah of gaiva, midah of haughtiness. And the Orchis Tzadikim explains why he began with the midah of gaiva. And he says, Hashar Harisha, in this first gate, Nedaber boy al midas ha-gaiva. We'll speak about the character trait of gaiva, of haughtiness. U'matoyiv shidiz damin tchilo l'chol ha-sha'orim. He says it's very appropriate that this shah, this discussion of the midah of gaiva should come first. Because of the necessity for a person to distance himself from it. It's the opening for many bad things. We do not find anything so bad amongst all the bad character traits as the midah of gaiva, of haughtiness. He says, therefore, a person has to be wise and a person has to find ways to distance himself from the midah of gaiva, to only use it in the proper ways, not to use it in improper ways. So the Orchis Tzadikim, right off the bat, right in the beginning, he tells us that this midah of gaiva is a terrible midah and it leads to so many other bad things. And we see as well, if we look at the Psukim of the Torah, that it's pretty clear that the midah of gaiva is from the worst midahs, if not the worst midah. Midahs, for the most part, are not addressed directly in the Torah. However, the midah of gaiva is certainly the most extensively addressed midah in the Torah, at least to my knowledge. Look in source number 16, the Psukim in Sefer Devarim, says, Yishom elecho petishkach es Hashem elokecha. Be careful not to forget Hashem. Forgetting Hashem, that's really the worst thing that a person could do. Levilti shemar mitzvoysov mishpotov chukaisov asher anoichim etzavich ha'ayoyim. Not to keep the mitzvahs, the laws and the commandments of Hashem that I command you today. Why are you warning me not to forget Hashem? Why would I forget Hashem? And the Pesukim Pasuk continues, Pen toichal misavata. Perhaps you'll eat and you'll be satiated. Uvatim toivim tivnev yashavta. And you'll build big, good houses and you'll dwell in them. Uvikorchov etzoyincho yirbiyun. You'll have plenty of cattle, sheep. The chesif is all of yirbeloch. You'll have plenty of gold and silver. The chaylasher of chayirbi, you'll have lots. You'll have plenty of assets and possessions. You'll have everything you want, everything you need. V'rom levavecha. What could potentially happen then? V'rom levavecha. Your heart will be lifted up, exalted. V'shalchachtos Hashem elokecha. You'll become haughty. You'll forget Hashem your God. Hamitziach hameretz Mitzrayim. Beis avodim, who takes you out of Mitzrayim. Took you out of Mitzrayim. From the house of slaves. And skipping a few psukim, you'll say in your heart, my strength, my power, and the might of my hand have gotten me all this wealth. And it's a big danger. When a person is very successful, he has the potential to forget about Hashem. To forget that everything he has really comes from Hashem. And Hashem says, you should have zochartos Hashem aleikecha. If that happens to you, if you become wealthy, if you have everything, there's a potential you might become haughty. You remember Hashem, your God. Hashem, who's the one who gives you the ability, the strength to be successful and to become wealthy. And the Torah takes down a number of psukim for the concern that a person who's successful might become haughty, and the Torah makes sure to warn a person against that. For most midos, for most character traits, we don't find in the Torah any clear warning, any clear aveira, loisase, he says, don't do this. But for the midah of gaiva, the Torah does not mince its words. The Torah uses sets aside a number of psukim warning a person not to become a bal gaiva, not to become haughty, and not to become carried away from his wealth and his success. And to another pasuk later on in Dvarim, in Parashat Shoftim, source number 17, on page 6, the Torah is talking about the king, and the king will have a great army, and he'll have a whole treasure room filled with all sorts of treasures and wealth. And the Torah has to gives guidelines for the king, how much he can have, how many wives he can have, how many horses he can have, gold and the silver. And the Torah explains the vilti rum levavoy me'echav, so that his heart should not be raised up, he shouldn't become haughty over his brothers, will vilti surman ha-mitzvah yomru smoyel, he shouldn't deviate from the mitzvahs right or left. It's even the king of the Jewish people, is not just a wealthy person, not just a powerful person. A king of the Jewish people has to be a righteous person. Ideally, the ideal king that the Torah talks about is someone who's a tzaddik, he's righteous, he's a tamar chacham, he's knowledgeable in Torah. And still the Torah has to warn him, levilti rum levavay me'echav, his heart should not become exalted, he shouldn't become haughty over his brothers. Even a great tzaddik, even a great tamar chacham, a great person, has to be warned. There's always the potential, there's always the danger that from his success, he might become a bal gaiva, he might become a haughty. The Torah clearly views gaiva, the midah of gaiva, haughtiness, as a great danger and a great pitfall a person can easily fall into. And the Archas Tzadikim explains that a bal gaiva constantly seeks ways to elevate himself over others in a number of areas. When it comes to material wealth, a person who's a bal gaiva, is a haughty person, he's constantly running after money, he needs to be the wealthiest, he needs to be the best over everyone else. And he's constantly looking around for all the luxuries that the world has to offer, clothing. He has to have the best clothing, the nicest clothing, the fastest clothing, the best labels on his clothing. And he has to have the best food, the delicacies, the most expensive food. We heard last night in our public speaking class about black ivory coffee. I'm not sure if you know what it is or not, but you could, if you don't, you could Google it later. $50 a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. You'll tell me if you want it after you find out what it's all about.
Ooh, I don't think so. I think I know what it's
about. Okay, we'll leave that alone for now. He has to purchase to build himself the biggest house, the fanciest house, with every new device and everything. That bal gaiva, he needs to be on the top. He needs to constantly be outdoing everyone else. Does he end up spending his time running after all the different luxuries that he wants, but in his pursuit of self-aggrandizement. I don't know if I pronounced that right. More or less. He comes to abandon the Torah and the mitzvahs as well. He spends all his time looking for the newest things, checking out what everyone else is doing to make sure he could outdo them. That he ends up abandoning the mitzvahs. He has no time for doing mitzvahs. Certainly has no time for learning Torah and Maasim Tovim. He's so busy with outdoing everyone else, keeping his eyes on everyone else, to make sure that he can outdo them, that he has no time to serve Hashem either. If he doesn't have the means to afford all of the luxuries that he has to get to outdo everyone else, so he'll resort to stealing. And these are the ways of Magaiva. These are the terrible pitfalls besides the midah itself. But these are the terrible pitfalls. These are the terrible things that gaiva, haughtiness, can lead a person to do. When it comes to socially, a bal gaiva, a haughty person, in order to elevate himself, just because he's a bal gaiva, doesn't mean he really has any great qualities. So if he doesn't have the great qualities himself, he has to put everyone else down in order to raise himself up. He looks down at other people, he treats them as inferior. In his mind, he has to always be right. If anyone says it, argues with him, he has to be right. Only his opinion counts, even if it's not a matter of right and wrong. But if anyone else has an opinion, his opinion is the only one that counts. And if he does something and people criticize him for it, that can't be. What he does has to be right. A bal gaiva, he doesn't have patience for other people. He's not interested. He doesn't tolerate them. In fact, he'll even be happy when other people fail, other people stumble. In the social realm as well, a bal gaiva, his gaiva comes out, and his gaiva prevents him from having appropriate relationships with other people. It goes so far as we find that Bal Gaiva, in his attempts to promote himself over others, he might even come to reject his own needs. Where do we find that? The prime example is a Korach. We find a Korach. Korach got so involved in trying to bring himself covered, to raise himself up, over Moshe and Aaron, that to gather people, to get a following who should follow him, to raise him up and to promote him, that he should be a leader. He got so involved in it, got so sucked into it, that it even led to his own destruction, the destruction of his family, the destruction of his friends. Despite the fact that he was trying to raise himself up, he completely got completely out of control, lost focus, and even brought to his own downfall. So these are some of the things that we find about Gaiva, how terrible Gaiva is, what it leads a person to, and the way Bal Gaiva conducts himself. So what's the underlying idea behind Gaiva, haughtiness? What's it all about at its root? What is Gaiva all about? What brings a person to Gaiva? So to answer this, to explain it, I think it's brought out very well by a piece in the Sifsei Chaim, which is commenting on a piece in the Chazon Ish, in the Sefer Emunah B'Tochah. Go back a couple of parashiyos, parashas Vayeshev, Yosef finds himself in jail in Mitzrayim. And we know very well that there's the Sarah Mashkim and the Sarah Oifim, the butler and the baker, and they have dreams. Yosef interprets the dreams. He tells the Sarah Mashkim that he's going to get out. Sarah Oifim is going to be killed. And Yosef mentions to the Sarah Mashkim that when he gets out of jail, please, if you could say a good word on my behalf to Paroi to get me out of here, please, I'd appreciate it if you could do that. That's what Yosef says to Sarah Mashkin. And we know the Chazal tell us that because of that, Yosef had to stay an extra 2 years in jail because he asked the Sarah Mashkin to mention him to Paroi. And Chazal find a pasuk in Tehillim that they associate with this story of Yosef. If you look at source number 18 on page 6, Pasuk Tehillim says, "Ashrei ha-gever asher som Hashem mivtachoi." Happy and fortunate is the man who places his trust in Hashem. And Chazal say that's referring to Yosef. Yosef was a real Baal Bitachoi. He put his trust in Hashem. That's where he put his trust. V'loifono el rehovim, and he does not turn to rehovim, to arrogant people. Chazal say that is referring to the fact that Yosef put some measure of reliance on the Sarah Mashkim, on the butler of Paroi, when he asked him to remember him and mention him to Paroi when he gets out of jail. That's what Chazal say. So the Chazon Ish explains that on one hand, we see that Yosef was a great Baal Bitachon. Chazal tell us, Ashrei ha-gever asher som Hashem mivtachoi, is a reference to Yosef. So what exactly happened with when he turned to the Sarah Mashkim and asked him, put his reliance on the Sarah Mashkim? And Chazon Ish explains, this is expounded upon by Chaim Friedlander in the Sifsei Chaim. He says that we know, as we mentioned before, that there's a balance between Bitachon, trust in Hashem, and Ishtavlos, and effort. So Yosef, he knew he put his trust in Hashem, but he knew he had to do some Ishtavlos, put in some effort as well. Says the Chazon Ish, Yosef saw when the Sarah Mashkim came to jail and he had a dream. And in that dream, Yosef saw references, Chazal tell us that one of the sources for the four cups of wine that we drink on Pesach night is from the third word Gefen, is repeated four times in the dream of the Sarah Mashkim, of the butler. And that's one of the references to the four cups of wine. Yosef saw in the dream of the Sarah Mashkim, he saw references to the Geula, to the redemption. He saw other references besides for the four times Gefen. He saw other references to the Geula, the redemption of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. Yosef saw this as a sign from Hashem that now this is going to be the beginning of the redemption of Jewish people from Mitzrayim. This was supposed to get the ball rolling. Yosef understood from there that he was supposed to make some use of the Sarah Mashkim by interpreting his dreams and scoring points with him, so to speak, Yosef was supposed to use this as a way to start things going. He was supposed to do some ishtadlos through this to get himself out of jail, to get the Jewish people to Mitzrayim, to get them out of Mitzrayim, to ultimately get the Torah, which was the process that had to be that they had to go through. So Yosef saw, he said, okay, I see these signs from Hashem that the time is right. Now's the time, I have to act on it to get myself out of jail, to get the process going. So therefore, Yosef decided that the proper ishtadlos would be to ask the Sarah Mashim, to mention to Paroi, perhaps that'll be the what will be necessary to get him out of Mitzrayim and for him to fulfill his role in bringing about this process, the Jewish people coming down to Mitzrayim and eventually leaving Mitzrayim and getting the Torah. So where did he go wrong? Where did he go wrong? What was his mistake? Says the Chazinish, look at the Pasuk. What does the Pasuk say? V'loifano el rehovim. The person praiseworthy and happy is the person who trusts in Hashem. He doesn't turn to arrogant people. Says the Chazinish, what's proper hishtadlus? Proper hishtadlus, proper effort that a person does is when someone does something that makes sense, that's well thought out, something that's reasonable that it should work, something that it makes sense that it should work. Logically, it should work. When a person does something that is highly unlikely that it'll work, that's not considered legitimate hishtadlos, that's called yish. That's giving up. I see that there's no other way out of this, so I'm going to rely on something that doesn't really make so much sense. A person doesn't get a job, and he figures, I'll just buy lottery tickets, and that's how I'll support myself. That's not hishtadlos. That's not legitimate hishtadlos for a person. It's not likely, it doesn't make sense, it's not logical that it should work. A person should be able to support his family by buying lottery tickets and winning the lottery. So too, says the Chazon Ish, because again, expounded upon by the Sifsei Chaim, v'loifon al rehovim. Yosef turning to the Sarah Mashkim was a waste of time. A waste of breath. Says the Chazon Ish, you turn to an arrogant person asking to do you a favor, it's not happening. Forget about it. Arrogant people, what's the epitome, what's arrogance, what's it all about? It's about self-centeredness. I care about myself, and I only care about myself. It's all about me. You turn to a rehovim, to an arrogant person, and you ask him for a favor, it's a waste of time, a waste of breath. There's no way that he's going to remember you. He could care less about you. He does not care about you. He only cares about himself. He only cares about his advancement. He only cares about elevating himself over others. He cares only about himself. Says the Chazon Ish, Yosef's mistake was, everything was fine, up until the point where he relied on the Sarah Mashkim. He asked the Sarah Mashkim to do him a favor. That's not hishtadlos. Hishtadlos has to make sense. Has to be logical. Has to be likely that it'll work. Asking the Sarah Mashkin, who's a rehovim, he's the Baal Gaiva, he's Hori, that doesn't make any sense. That's called a Maisa Yiyosh, that's called something that comes about from a person giving up and seeing there's no hope, so I'll try, I'll give it a shot, why not, maybe it'll work. Asking the Sarah Mashkin was not considered legitimate hishtadlos, that was not a legitimate way of Yosef trying to get himself out of Mitzrayim. Why is Sarah Mashkim referred to as Rehovim, an arrogant person? How do we know Sarah Mashkim was arrogant? The answer is because he came from Mitzrayim. The meaning of Mitzrayim was they were arrogant. Mitzrayim, they were full of themselves. Paroi, li yoiri v'ani asisini. It's all about me. I'm odoin ha'olam. I'm the master of the world. Paroi says, I am the God. I'm the master of the universe. I control everything. I made the yor. I made myself. I made everything. And we find as well, The Mitzrayim, the Mishenes Kone, a reed like support for the Jewish people. It's the same idea. It's the same arrogance of Paroi of Li Oyrivasi Daniasi Sidi. That's the same Mishenes Kone. That's the same reed like support of Mitzrayim. You can't rely on Mitzrayim. You can't rely on Mitzrayim as the Sarah Mashkim to mention you to Paroi. You can't rely on Mitzrayim to provide support for you, to provide assistance for you. They're Mishenes Kone. They're a reed like support. You try to rely on them, they're going to fall down. They're going to stab you in the back. You try to rely on them, yes, and to mention you to Paroi. It's a waste of time. V'loipono el rehovim, Sarah Mashkim, who's a Mitzri, he's arrogant. Arrogant people, they're self-centered. They care about only themselves. They don't care about you, they're not interested in you. They'll stab you in the back, and they couldn't care less. Relying on a Mitzri, relying on Sarah Mashkim, for Yosef, certainly for Yosef, on his level, the great Baal Bitachon that he was, relying on a mitzvah is a waste of time. It's not considered legitimate shtablos. Comes at the same idea. There's no two different reasons for the destruction of Mitzrayim. There's one reason for the destruction of Mitzrayim, and that is their arrogance. It's the same li yoyri v'niyasi sini. It's Paris proclamation, and that I am the Adon Ha'olam. I'm the master of the universe. I created the Nile. I created myself. It's the same thing as the Mishenes Kana. It's all one idea. Paro as the leader, the nation of Mitzrayim, they were all a bunch of arrogant people. Therefore, you can't rely on them. They were Mishenes Kana. And Paro is saying, Li Yoyri Vanyasi Sini, I have my river. I made myself. I'm the master of the world. It's all one underlying idea of the arrogance of Mitzrayim. If you skip a little bit, you go to source number 20, you'll see Hashem says, it skips a bunch of psukim in between, but later on Hashem says Mitzrayim is going to be completely desolate, it's going to be totally destroyed, nothing going on there. Then Hashem says, Ki chol yomar Hashem Elohim, so says Hashem, Miketz Aiboim Shono Akavetz et Mitzrayim. After I destroy them, utterly destroy them, and scatter them amongst all the nations, after 40 years, Akavetz et Mitzrayim, I'll gather them back together, and Ho'amim Hashem Afoitzu Shama, from the nations that they were scattered amongst them. V'shavti es shivos Mitzrayim, I'll bring back the captives of Mitzrayim. And I'll bring them back to the land of Pasrois, which is in Mitzrayim, Eretz Mechurasam, the land where they originally dwelled. And then they're going to be a lowly nation. From all the nations, they'll be lowly. They'll no longer raise themselves up over the nations. I will diminish them. They'll no longer rule and dominate over the other nations. They'll no longer be a source of support and reliance to the Jewish people, which would remind them of their previous sins of relying on Mitzrayim, when the Jewish people would turn after them. They'll know Hashem your God. Hashem says to Mitzrayim, the arrogance, it won't go anymore. Hashem says, I'm going to destroy Mitzrayim, I'm going to start fresh. I'm going to start fresh as a mamloch shfolo, a lowly nation of l'sinasir al-agoyim. Hashem says, I'm going to knock you down, you're going to stay down. Your arrogance, Hashem says, will be rectified by the destruction. We'll start fresh, gather them back together. And they'll no longer be an elevated, a strong, powerful nation. Rather, they'll be a small, lowly nation. They will no longer rule, and the Jewish people will no longer find them as a source of reliance and support. And it's a fitting ending. Hashem's complaint against Mitzrayim was their arrogance. Therefore, Hashem says that I'm going to destroy Mitzrayim. I'll bring them back. When I bring them back, they're going to be a lowly nation. They'll no longer be the same arrogant nation that they started off as. I'd like to make one more point, just one more idea. At the end of the day, despite Paro's arrogance, how can Paro say, I made myself? I created the Nile. I'm the master of the universe. How could a person possibly think that? It makes no sense. Rationally, no. How could any rational, logical person say such a thing? It makes no sense. It's one thing if a person's haughty, he thinks he's the best basketball player, he thinks he's the best at whatever he does, at his profession, it becomes haughty because of that. But to the extent that a person could say, Li Oiri Vaniasi Sini, that I'm the creator, I'm the master of the universe, I made myself. How can such a thing be? It's completely against logic. It doesn't make any sense at all. Baron Kaldor in the Mishnah Sibarin explains, and he says, I'll just say it very short, he says that just as a person could have a physical illness that could make him lose his faculties, that could make a person be completely irrational, so too Hashem established in the world that through the bad midos of a person could become completely irrational and not be able to recognize the truth about the world. Although it's evident, you look out at the world, there's so many ways to prove, so many ways in the world that it's evident that there has to be a God, there has to be Hashem who created the world and who sustains the world. And so how do you find out there people who could deny it? And they come up with the craziest explanations of how they could prove their illogical nonsense. How could that be? Says Ibn Hashem, he says that Hashem, since belief in Hashem from the fundamentals of Jewish belief is such an important part of it, so Hashem wanted there to be Bechira. We could only be rewarded for things that we choose to do the right thing. So on one hand, it's so evident in the world that there Hashem is there. Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, I am Hashem your God. And Hashem is there, Hashem created the world. So how can we be rewarded for keeping that, for believing in Hashem? It's so evident, it's so obvious. So Hashem made a way for there to be Bechira. Hashem says that if you have good midos, so then you'll see it clearly. You'll see it as it is. There'll be no doubts about it. But if a person has bad midos, if a person's a bal gaiva, if he has other bad midos, Hashem created in the nature of the world that a person who's a bal gaiva, a person who has bad midos, who's haughty, that his logic comes off. He doesn't see things the way they are. He doesn't see things clearly. Everything becomes skewed in his mind. A person who has bad midos, just as a person who could have physical illness and they could become irrational, so to a person who has bad midos can become irrational as well. Paroi and others, Nebuchadnezzar, others, they became full of themselves. They had gaiva. And because of their gaiva brought them to be irrational. A person has a bechira, a person has a choice. If he chooses to have good midos, then he'll be able to see clearly. He'll be able to believe in Hashem without any doubts. And that's his bechira, to choose to have good midos, so that he should see things clearly and believe in Hashem. If a person chooses to have bad midos, then he won't see things clearly. His worldview will be skewed. He won't be able to be rational and logical. And he can come to the point where he'll deny Hashem's existence. A person can even come to the point where he claims that he himself is a god and he created himself. That is the potential that there is, how a person could choose to believe or not to believe. It's based on a person's choices about his midos, about his character, the way he conducts himself. And Rabbi Aaron, it brings that the Medrash says, without going through it's source number 19, just the part that underlined, the Haroitza Litois Yitte. Moshe was writing the Torah. He got up to the Pasuk, which says, Hashem says, Nase Odom B'tzalmenu Kidmuseinu. Hashem said to the Malachim, let's make man. And Moshe says to Hashem, what are you doing? You're going to write in the Torah, let's make man. It's going to lead people to believe that there's not only one God, that maybe that there's a partnership up there. Hashem, what are you doing? So Hashem says to Moshe, Kesoi, write it. V'horoitze litois yite. Someone who wants to make a mistake will make a mistake. So what does it mean, someone who wants to make a mistake will make a mistake? A person makes a mistake. If he doesn't know any better, he makes a mistake. What does it mean, horoitze litois, someone who wants to make a mistake? If you want, it's not a mistake. That's deliberate. What is it? A person wants to make a mistake. First of all, it's evident in the world. Second of all, what does it mean someone wants to make a mistake? Says the Baron, the point is that a person has control of deciding how his midos are. If a person's about midos, then he'll see things as they are. There's no room for making mistakes then. Well, a person who writes a litoy is someone who has bad midos, someone who chooses to have bad midos, he chooses to not be able to see things as they are. He chooses to make himself irrational by choosing to have bad midos. It's a choice that a person makes. If a person chooses to have bad midos, then he leaves himself open to the possibility of making mistakes, of not seeing the clear evidence in the world, the existence of Hashem. He leaves himself the possibility of becoming like Pari and Nebuchadnezzar, a person who can go so far as to consider himself a god.
Thank you.